Welcome to the GBC Sermon Podcast, a weekly podcast from Gamia Baptist Church in Sydney, Australia. I'm Mark Rader, Senior Pastor here at GBC, and I hope that wherever you are listening from, you experience a sense of unity with the church around the world. Our sermon series is focused on the book of Hebrews. And in this week's message, the author continues to explore the greatness of Jesus' ministry as high priest by focusing on the greater promise that Jesus mediates and the purpose of that promise for the people of God.
Hello, everyone. Today's Bible reading is from Hebrews chapter 8, beginning at verse 1. And in my Bible, it's titled The High Priest of a New Covenant. Now, the main point of what we are saying is this. We do have such a high priest who sat down at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven and who serves in the sanctuary, the true tabernacle set up by the Lord, not by a mere human being. Every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices, and so it was necessary for this one also to have something to offer. If he were on earth, he would not be a priest, for there are already priests who offer the gifts prescribed by the law. They serve at a sanctuary that is a copy and shadow of what is in heaven. This is why Moses was warned when he was about to build the tabernacle. See to it that you make everything according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. But in fact, the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs as the covenant of which he is mediator is superior to the old one, since the new covenant is established on better promises.
Well, as a preacher, there is nothing quite so encouraging as these opening words of a passage. Now, the main point of what we are saying is this. We do have such a high priest. And so right off the bat, you know and I know exactly what we're going to be talking about over these next 20 minutes or so. And that is this ongoing discussion about the sort of high priest that we have in Jesus. Now, the author has given us a bunch of information about what he believes Jesus's ministry should be identified with. And that is, as Rox took us through last week, a priesthood in the order of Melchizedek. And I've been thinking a little bit about an analogy that might help us make some sense of what the author's talking about, because for us, the idea of a high priest is still a little bit foreign. So I was thinking a bit about it this week and came up with this analogy that might help us put some of this in perspective. I don't know if you've ever spoken to someone or actually have experienced the starting up of a business. I've spoken to a few people who have started businesses, and they've gotten to a point in time where the energy and passion and excitement of the startup team is no longer enough. And they come to this kind of critical tipping point where they decide to invest some significant capital in the appointment of someone who is of, if I can use the language of Hebrews, a greater order. Someone who has greater experience, who has greater skills, who has a bigger, larger network, who has a higher capacity, who is going to take a fair amount of capital to appoint, but who will be able to take the organization to the next level. To some degree, what the author of Hebrews is saying is that Jesus is like that next level. He is the priest of a higher order with greater capacity, better access to God, a more profound ministry. And he really wants to unpack that in the passages that follow, beginning here in chapter 8. In chapter 8 of Hebrews, he talks about and foreshadows that he's going to move on to talk about the ministry of Jesus in the tabernacle. And we'll touch on that in a couple of weeks' time. But I'd actually like to return to something that he has introduced for us, the author has introduced to us, just before his Melchizedekian digression, where he has left the argument to kind of focus on Melchizedek before coming back to the idea of the promise. So if you have a look in chapter 8 of Hebrews, verse 6, it says these words about Jesus' higher order priesthood. He says, in fact, the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs, the earthly priests, as the covenant of which he is a mediator is superior to the old one, since the new covenant is established on better promises. And it's this language of promise that actually takes us back to Hebrews chapter 6. In Hebrews chapter 6, and starting in verse 12, just after the author has warned them strongly about not drifting away, reminds them to pay attention, he then says, verse 12, "We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised." And he goes on to give an example. "When God made his promise to Abraham, since there was no one greater for him to swear by, he swore by himself, saying, 'I will surely bless you and give you many descendants.' And so, after waiting patiently, Abraham received what was promised." So I don't want you to become lazy. I want you to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promise. Oh, here's the example of Abraham. And more significantly, we are told the promise. In chapter 8, Jesus has a ministry that is based on a greater promise. But here's the first one. This promise of, "I will surely bless you and give you many descendants." And if you just go on just a little bit in verse 17, it says this: "Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised, he confirmed it with an oath." And this actually introduces for us, I think, a really important concept as we consider Jesus's ministry. And that is the relationship between the unchanging purpose of God and the promise of God, both to Abraham, but also the one that Jesus's ministry is based on. There's an unchanging purpose in the midst of that. And it's important that we make the distinction. You see, promises are to be fulfilled. But promises are given not just to fulfill them, but are given for a purpose. So if I promise to send you a link to that article that we were talking about, the fulfillment is when I actually send you the link. But the purpose of the promise is so that you have something to read that in our conversation we agreed would be really helpful for you, maybe in your ministry or in your business or as a father or as a mother, whatever it might be. The purpose is different than the fulfillment. The same is true when you think about the promises that are made by a man and a woman when they get married. The fulfillment of the promises to love and to honor and to be faithful are seen in the actions of that couple in the rest of their lives. But the purpose of those promises is to create the space for a full, deep, rich, lifelong relationship, a marriage relationship. And so God has made a promise to Abraham that has an unchanging purpose. And it's really important that we kind of latch on to what that purpose is. You see, God's purpose in promising to Abraham that he'd bless him and give him lots of descendants wasn't for God to show off and say, "Hey, look what I can do. I can take an elderly couple and give them children when no one thought it was possible. Or I can bless you in all sorts of different ways. Aren't I great?" The purpose that God had in blessing Abraham and in making his descendants a nation was ultimately to bring them into a relationship with himself that they might be a blessing to the world. If you were with our community of faith last year when we preached through Exodus, you might recall that when God brings them out of Egypt and brings them to Mount Sinai, he then enters into a covenant relationship. And there he describes what he hopes will be the case with this group of people, that he will be their God and provide all the things that they require and need, and they will be his people, that they will be marked as those who are in relationship with God. He actually goes so far as to describe the nation of Israel as a kingdom of priests, a group of people who would mediate the blessings of God to the world, who would teach the world what it looked like to live in relationship with God, and who, in their own behavior, in the way they followed and embraced the law of God, would be a living, breathing demonstration, a display home, so to speak, of what it looked like to be in relationship with God. This was the purpose, and that purpose remains unchanged, even though there is now a greater promise. And to get to that promise, we need to then jump ahead in chapter 8 to begin to look at the oracle that comes from Jeremiah chapter 31. So in Hebrews chapter 8, the author quotes this section from Jeremiah, which was given originally in a context in a time when it looked as if the promises and purposes of God were about to fail. Jeremiah ministered at the very end of the political life of the southern kingdom of Judah. By the end of his ministry, the king was dead and his descendants in exile. The temple had been torn down, Jerusalem had been torn down, and the people had been exiled from the land. To all outer appearances, it looked as if the promises of God had failed and that the purposes of God had also failed. And yet, in that context, we are given these words. So let me read them out to you. "The days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the people of Israel and with the people of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their ancestors when I took them by the hand and led them out of Egypt, because they did not remain faithful to my covenant, and I turned away from them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant I will establish with the people of Israel after that time, declares the Lord." And here is the promise, the new promise that Jesus' ministry is based upon. "I will put my laws in their minds and write them on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will they teach their neighbor or say to one another, 'Know the Lord,' because they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. For I will forgive their wickedness and will remember their sins no more." And the author will go on in chapter 9 to talk about the forgiveness of sins. But let me just focus briefly on this promise to write the laws of God in their minds and to write them on their hearts. This is the central promise that God makes through Jeremiah. And as the author points out, that is now being mediated or fulfilled by Jesus. And it's a really critical promise. You see, the first covenant fell apart because the people's hearts, and we come back to that again, were hard. The people's hearts were unfaithful to the Lord. They never internalized the law. Because ultimately what the law points to is what a lawless life would look like. I've used this example before, so forgive me if you've heard this illustration. But if the government were to repeal tomorrow morning the laws around seatbelt use, if they repealed all of them, you no longer had to use a seatbelt, there were no longer any fines for it, you couldn't lose your license, no more laws about seatbelt use. When I got into my car on Tuesday morning, the day after those laws had been repealed, the first thing I would do, even though there was no longer a law about it, was I'd put my seatbelt on. And the reason is that I have internalized the benefit of that law for my safety. I have become, in relationship to seatbelt regulations, lawless. I no longer require the regulation to force me to do something. It has become internalized. And the law that God gave to the people of Israel was never meant to be a rod for their backs. It was meant to describe and explain and portray what it would look like for a group of people to be truly lawless in relationship with God, to have all of that internalized within them. But for the people of Israel, the law always remained, it seemed, an external reality. Something that they were told to do rather than something that they wanted to do. And we know the difference between those things, don't we? There's a huge difference between being told to do something and wanting to do something. And the promise of God in Jeremiah that the author of Hebrews picks up and places squarely in the ministry of Jesus is this, that I will write my law on their hearts. That the law of God, that what it means to live in relationship with Him will be truly, deeply internalized within us. Our hearts will be made new so that we can fulfill the unchanging purpose of God, that He might have a people who mediate the blessings of life with God to the world around them. that we might be a group of people who live a truly lawless life, a life of freedom and love as we serve God. As we might be those who teach the world about who God is and demonstrate in our lives exactly what it means to live in relationship with Him. That purpose is unchanging, but the promise is new and better and improved. This is a really, I think, significant aspect of what the author is then arguing. Jesus is a priest of a higher order. He has a greater ministry, greater access, a more significant power, a greater capacity to bring about a greater promise for the unchanging purposes of God. Which brings us, I think, to the matter of hope. I don't know about you. There are times in my life when I wonder, and almost, I probably don't despair, but when I wonder if my heart will ever be truly, deeply changed. I don't know if you've ever experienced that sense of just kind of thinking to yourself, I don't know if my life is becoming any more lawless than it ever was. I don't know if my heart has been renewed that much at all. And when we begin to think about what we want, a new heart, when we want a heart that will be true and faithful to the Lord, when we want more than anything else to be changed people, and yet we don't see that, where does our hope lie? I think it's really important to recognize that hope exists in the space between a promise and the purpose. Not in terms of fulfillment, which is time, but the promise and the purpose, and ultimately our hope, is in a person. When a man and a woman hold hands in their wedding ceremony, and they look each other in the eye, and they make these promises to one another, the hope that the groom has in his bride is not in the words that she speaks, or even in the hoped outcome. It's actually in her. He hopes in her that she will be the kind of person who will fulfill those promises and enable their relationship. And, shall I say, she hopes the same thing about him. For you and for I, our hope is not just in the promise of a changed heart. It's not even in the purpose of that changed heart. Our hope is in Jesus. And here's the good news. Jesus has the capacity to change our hearts. He has the ability. You're going back to that idea of a startup hiring a general manager of greater experience and greater skills and a stronger network and a larger capacity to take the organization to the next level. Jesus has what it takes to take us, not to the next level of spirituality, but to usher us, as the author has already said, into the very presence of God. That he has the capacity and the power through his own death and resurrection, through who he is, through his obedience, through his suffering. He has all that it takes to fulfill this promise and ultimately fulfill the purposes of God in your life and in mine. So if you find yourself desperate for the new heart, don't turn to other things. Don't place your hope in the next sermon or your next Bible study or in some friend or in just working harder. Place your hope firmly and squarely in Jesus, because he is the one to whom this promise has been given, to whom the fulfillment of that promise and its purpose in the world has been given, and he can do it, and he will do it, for that is what he has been called to do. So let me encourage you, place your hope in Jesus, because he is the one who will change us and bring about the plans and purposes of God in our lives and in the world. Jesus has what it takes to bring about the purpose of God by fulfilling the promise of writing the law of God on our hearts. We can place our hope in him. Have you? Is there someone you know who really needs to hear this message? Why not share it with them and see what God does through that? And remember, you can follow us on Facebook or visit our website at gamiabaptist.org.au. And we'd love for you to join us for church at gbconline.org.au at our regular service times of 8:30, 10:30, and 6 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. God bless.